You know, there's been a very popular video that has made its way around the internet. I think it's been seen some like 850 million times. I'm sure you've seen it, but I want to watch it again because I think it captures the reality of relationships. Take a look at it.
Charlie bit me. No, Charlie bit me. And that really hurt, Charlie, and it's still hurting.
Well, that's about how relationships go. Sometimes you want to trust somebody, so you get close to them and you open up your life to them only to get bit, only to get hurt. And, you know, there are times when we remove ourselves and recoil away from relationships that we should be open to. You know, last week I had, or rather 2 weeks ago, had presented Proverbs chapter 4 to you. Here's what it says, just as a refresher on the screen. Above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it. And we had talked about that as determining property lines around our heart, like making sure that we establish some kind of guardrails to our heart. And there's just some people in life, let's be honest, you don't have to do that with. You can be vulnerable with them, open up your life to them, and just like property lines, you just kind of, they're unclear, and the cut of the lawnmower decides those. And there's other people, though, that are so toxic that you have to build some fences and you got to put some gates around. And you got to welcome them in only at certain times when the relationship can be moved forward rather than to be attacked. But here's what I've discovered. I've discovered that oftentimes we often put guards up, walls up that shouldn't exist. You know, I read last week that 25% of Americans are unhappy, depressed, and lonely. 25%. It has nothing to do about wealth. It has nothing to do about health. It has nothing to do about your job. It has nothing to do about any of that stuff, like appearances. Here's what it all comes down to. The author had said it like this. Loneliness is not the absence of fear, because that's with loneliness, or absence of faces, rather, it's the absence of intimacy. We just don't want to get close to anybody. We'll be a part of the crowd, but we won't get close, and we won't have a deep understanding of another person, because we've been bit, we've been hurt, and so that has us recoil away. And the conclusion to that was, people are lonely because they build walls instead of bridges. Like, real simple stuff. That's what we're talking about. And I want to be a good pastor to you today, and I just want you to acknowledge, to see, to realize that life is about connections, and you're going to have to become vulnerable with somebody, but I want you to make sure it's the right somebody, that there is a foundation of faith, because I think faith people need to have some good faith friends. And one of the stories that came to mind in the scriptures is the friendship that was formed between a guy by the name of David and his good pal named Jonathan. Now, from the onset, it doesn't look like they have much in common. Jonathan is a privileged prince, and David is a shepherd who is living out in the pastures, minding the sheep. But David had these incredible skills. And they had this encounter because David's incredible skills led him right to the palace where Jonathan lived. David was courageous, but he was also creative. I like those kind of guys. He was able to play the harp. And so because of that, he got a full-time gig at the palace because Jonathan's dad, King Saul, the king of Israel, he had some like crazy issues in life, and the only thing that soothed him was music, and so he'd have David come in and soothe him with music, and Jonathan found out who David was, and they became close friends. These guys were both adventurous, though. I mean, they had more in common than they did a part of not having things in common. Like, they were both adventurous and courageous. Like, if they were alive today, they'd probably be skydiving buddies. They'd probably go climb mountains, do motocross together. These were wild guys that would probably be found in a Mountain Dew commercial of some kind, okay? So David was this teenager when they met, and they met when Jonathan witnessed David's courageous skills on the battlefield against a giant named Goliath. And if you guys know that story, David comes from the house where his father is, and he's just going to deliver food to his brothers who are on the battlefield on the front lines. There's a giant who is an enemy of God. He was a Philistine named Goliath, and And it was his role to go out before the battle would start and say, is there anybody who can take me on, challenge me? If you can beat me, you'll win the whole battle. And it was like a way into like destroy the morale of the enemy. And the Israelites were completely destroyed in their morale. They couldn't face the giant. Instead, David shows up and he says, why are you guys shaking in your boots here? Like, we've got a God that can overcome giants. And David like looks in his past and he says, my God has helped me kill the bear. My God has helped me kill the lion. Who is this guy compared to the bear or the lion and compared to my God? And so they want to arm him for battle. And David's like, I don't need your shields. I don't need your swords. I don't need your spears. I don't need your armor. Just let me have my slingshot and go out there like I always have before. Just me, the Lord, and my slingshot. And he takes a stone and he winds it up and he throws it and hurls it at the giant. It strikes Goliath between the eyes. Goliath faints, falls over. And I love this next part. We don't teach this enough. He goes over to Goliath and he takes this huge broad sword and he takes the giant's sword and he lops off the giant's head and he holds it up for all the Israelites to see, like, look what our God can do. He can defeat the giants. Guys, Jonathan saw that moment. He saw that moment and he was like, whoa, that's my kind of guy right there. Because Jonathan was no slouch either. He was a brave warrior as well. There's one story in which Jonathan takes his armor bearer and they go to sneak into the enemy camp by themselves and they get caught. And the lights are kind of turned on them and they're exposed. And so they have to fight back to back, wielding a sword together. And the Bible tells us they killed some like 20 men in a half an acre of distance. Like absolute mighty men who would take on the enemy, destroy who was ever in front of them. They weren't afraid of bloodshed. They weren't afraid of much. And they had this heart connection. But I think beyond all that, their greatest connection was they had an equal faith in God. Like, please do not dismiss this in the story. Well, they had a lot of things in common. The most common thing was the foundation that they had in faith. Guys, there's a lot of things you can build your friendships on. There's a ton of superficial things that you can build friendships on. And you're going to find when push comes to shove, your friendships aren't going to last. Like wealth or hobbies or maybe a connected job, some of those things are not going to last over time. But what I've discovered is when one friend and another friend have a maturing, growing, healthy faith, those friendships can last forever through thick and through thin. And I want you to stare at this story today, and I want you to say, God, I want some friends like that in my life. I want some people in my life, like I see Jonathan and David, I want some like that. But may I express to you as a pastor, to get that way, you're going to have to start opening your heart up. Stop building walls and start building some bridges here. Because what I want you to see is, number one, deep friends aren't formed quickly. Deep friendships are developed over time. Like, you ever met these folks that want to be your friend like instantaneously? Like, they want to know all about you. They want to hang out all the time. You're like, whoa, hold on here, buddy. Right? Maybe you heard stories of dates that had gone south. Like, immediately, she's talking marriage on the first date. Calm down there, Tiger. We're not going there just yet, right? By date number two, it's kids. And by date number three, well, there is no date number three because she scared you off, right? They want instantaneous connection immediately. Friendships aren't formed that way. Let's just be honest. They're formed over time, usually through some shared experiences. And you might be in this room, you say, yeah, but I really want a husband, or I really want a wife, or I really want a deep connected friend. Good. You should. Just take your time, okay? Just walk some miles in your shoes together and have some shared experiences. This is the way Jesus did it. So he had 120 friends that followed him wherever you went. You don't hear much about those guys. 120 men and women that just followed him everywhere he went. You hear about 12, don't you? And you could probably give me the name of three of those 12, because out of those 12, three of them were very close to Jesus. And you can read the eyewitness accounts called the Gospels in the New Testament part of the Bible, and you see that those friendships are formed naturally. They're not forced. They're not coerced. And they have some shared experiences. And over 3.5 years of Jesus sharing his heart with those guys, they got close. It didn't happen in a date, and it didn't happen at just an event. It was a process. And this is the way deep friendships are formed. This is the way Jonathan and David's was formed. Turn with me to 1 Samuel chapter 17. I think it's page 228 in the Bible in the chair rack in front of you. David had just killed that giant Goliath. He now approaches King Saul, Jonathan's dad, for the very first time. And Saul wants to meet him. And this is how David gets his musician's gig at the palace. 1 Samuel 17, verse 57, here's what it says. As soon as David returned from killing the Philistine, that's the giant, Abner, who was a king's assistant, took him and brought him before Saul with David still holding, love this line, the Philistine's head. Ain't letting go of this thing, right? This is my trophy. This is what I've won. And I can just see the blood trail dripping behind him as he takes it into the throne room of the king, and he just kind of holds it up like, remember this guy? Remember this guy? You are all afraid of him. No, no, no. God can even defeat the giants. Verse 58, Saul says, whose son are you, young man? And David says, I am the son of your servant Jesse of Bethlehem. Look at verse 18, verse 1, or chapter 18, rather, verse 1. After David had finished talking with Saul, Jonathan became one in spirit with David, and he loved him as himself, which is to mean that Jonathan looked at David and said, you are a man's man. You are a leader's leader. I'm going to follow you from here and back. Wherever you go, I'm going to go. You are my kind of guy. If I were to ever kill a giant, I would walk around with his head in my hand and bring him to my dad, just like a cat who had killed a rat brings it to the owner, right? There you go, Dad. Look at verse 2 of chapter 18. From that day on, Saul, Jonathan's dad, kept David with him and did not let him return home to his family. You're mine now. You got a permanent gig at the palace. And Jonathan made a covenant with David, because he loved him as himself. So they're growing this deep connective bond. Verse 4, Jonathan took off his robe he was wearing, gave it to David, along with his tunic, and even his sword, his bow, and his belt. Now, sadly, I have to state this because of the culture that we live in today. Because there are eager, progressive pastors out there that want to turn 1 Samuel chapter 18, verse 4, into some kind of sexual intimacy story between Jonathan and David. That is a gross misinterpretation of Scripture. It sets a progressive agenda that never existed in the Scriptures. Get it out of your head. What was really going on was a way, if you know the context historically, of Jonathan looking at David and say, I know I should be next in line to be king. I am the prince. But David, I am recognizing God's authority in your life, and he has anointed you to be king, and I will lay down my authority before you. I will lay down my spear. I will lay down my shield. I will lay down all that I am before you and say, you have charge over me. You are my marked king. Boy, what a great context when you put it like that, huh? Of Jonathan saying, I'll go where you go, you lead, I'll follow, I will be there. And that's what you find in this relationship. You find Jonathan expressing to David, you're my leader now. And what I love about that side of the story, what I absolutely love about Jonathan and his humility is, he recognizes, I'm not going to be king, David's going to be king, and he's not resentful for it. He's not jealous. You have those friends in your life, they're jealous because of every success you have? They're not happy for you. That's not a true friend. A deep, committed friend says, I'm going to celebrate your accomplishments. I'm going to celebrate when you celebrate. I'm going to be in sorrow when you're in sorrow. That's the true nature of a friend. And not everyone in David's life was like Jonathan, though. I mean, King Saul, Jonathan's father, he became jealous of David's success. David was becoming a national hero, and as he climbed in fame, Saul's jealousy and anger climbed towards David. Take a look at 1 Samuel chapter 18, verse 6 and following. It says, when the men were returning home after David had killed the Philistine, the women came out from all the towns of Israel to meet King Saul with singing and dancing. And then they made up this little joyful song with tambourines and harps. Verse 7 says, they danced and they sang. Here was the song. Saul has slain his thousands and David his tens of thousands. You see what's going on here? They're singing, David is more powerful, more popular than Saul, our king. Verse 8, Saul was angry. Why? Because he was like a little kid mentally. This refrain displeased him greatly. They have credited David with tens of thousands, he thought, but me with only thousands? What more? What more can he get but the kingdom? He's saying, next stop is my throne. Verse 9, and from that time on, Saul kept a close eye on David. His jealousy made sure he knew David's every move. But can I tell you about Saul's jealousy? Saul's jealousy led him into these bouts of depression and fits of rage. Like one time, David's playing his harp, just hanging out in the corner, playing his harp, trying to soothe Saul's soul. And Saul picks up a spear and hucks it right at David. Luckily, he missed. Didn't happen just once, but twice. Another time, David is assigned to the battlefield, but he's assigned to the section of fighting where it is the fiercest. And Saul's whole objective and goal was put David in the way where the fight is the fiercest in hopes that the enemy strikes down David and I won't have to deal with David anymore. Guys, everybody loved David except Saul. And Jonathan starts to understand this, that his dad's not a fan of his best friend, of his buddy. And so Jonathan sticks up for his best friend. I love that side of it because that's what best friends do. They protect. Look at 1 Samuel chapter 19, verse 4. Jonathan spoke well of David to Saul, his father. Like, Dad, I know you don't like this guy, but let me tell you the truth about my buddy here. Let nothing the king do wrong to his servant. He has not wronged you, and what he has done has benefited you greatly. Verse 5, 1 Samuel 19. He took his life in his hands when he killed the Philistine. And the Lord won a great victory for all of Israel, and you saw it, and you were glad. Why then would you do wrong to an innocent man like David by killing him for no reason? Saul listened to Jonathan, and then Saul took this oath. Listen to this oath. As surely as the Lord lives, David will not be put to death. So Jonathan called David, and he told him all that had been said, the whole conversation, and he brought him to Saul. And here's the line. David was with Saul as before. Like, hey, we're friends again. Like, all of a sudden, we're going to let bygones be bygones. We're going to bury the hatchet. And that kind of leads me to this second lesson that we find in the story of Jonathan and David, is that deep friends will always protect. Deep friends will always protect. Isn't that what Jonathan was doing? Like, Dad, your anger is bent wrong. You have the wrong focus of your ire here. David's really a good guy. You know that. Make a truce. And he protects David, his buddy. Yeah, I have an older brother. He's 3 years older than me, about 3-4 inches taller than me. I got beat up quite often, you know, like a lot, which meant I lost a lot as a kid. And there were times when I felt like my brother was my greatest enemy. Like, I felt like he hated me more than his worst enemy. But there were these wonderful moments. Maybe you have a brother or sister like this. Wonderful moments. You're like, whoa, maybe he really does love me at times. It was those moments where he would stand up to protect me when his friends would try to knock me down. We played pickup football an awful lot, like tons. And so we would play with his friends. And many of I knew, some I didn't. And as we played tackle football together, it seemed like I was the one that was always taking the brunt of it. And I probably was. Like, anytime there was a play, even though it wasn't on my side, I'd get knocked over. If I were to catch or carry the ball, they would tackle me by the legs and try to hold me up so the next guy could come and knock me out, kind of a thing. And I was knocked out a few times. And it was in those moments where football turned to murder ball that my brother would, like, stand up. He was the biggest one of the group. And he'd start picking fights with those kids, like, no, that's my little brother. If anybody's going to hit him, it's me, not you guys, right? It's going to be me. And so there was those moments of when I was awake and attentive, when I wasn't knocked out, that I was like, wow, he really is an impressive guy. He's standing, he's protecting me because these guys are all trying to harm me. And that's what good friends do. They stand up and they protect you when people are trying to harm you. And Jonathan spoke to his dad. He said, Dad, listen, you've got this all wrong. Your jealousy's taking control. Your ego is out of whack here. And really, Saul, if you really get into it psychologically, he was schizophrenic. He loved David one moment and hated David the next. Now that I'm thinking about it, maybe my brother was schizophrenic to a degree. But there was one time when David was asleep at night and Saul sent troops into David's house to have him killed. Now, there was a truce. There was a truce. So David went to sleep at peace, thinking the king was at peace with him. But Saul was in a schizophrenic mood, and he sent soldiers in the house and tried to have David killed. And David narrowly escaped out of the window and went and quickly found Jonathan and said, Dude, your dad's whacked out. What's up? Look at 1 Samuel chapter 20. Now, he didn't say that. That was my interpretation, by the way. Look at verse 1. David says, What have you done? What is my crime? How have I wronged your father that he's trying to kill me? Now, notice Jonathan's defense. No way. Never. Never, Jonathan replied. You're not going to die. Look, my father doesn't do anything great or small without letting me know. Like, Dad, he wouldn't have done that. No, he made a truce with you. You guys are at peace. My dad didn't do this. Look at verse 3. But David took an oath and said, Your father knows very well that I've found favor in your eyes. And he has said to himself, Jonathan must know this. Jonathan must not know this, or he will be grieved. Yet as surely as the Lord lives and as you live, there is only a step between me and death. And I know what Jonathan is doing. Jonathan's doing what I have tried to do before, and I think what you've probably tried to do before. Look at the best of the people you love. Look for the best in the people you love. And Jonathan's sitting there going, no way, my dad told me he loved you. My dad told me the truth. There's no way he'd go back on his word. I can't believe this. And he was looking at the best of his dad. Like moms, you've had this before where your son comes in, he's had like a substance abuse addiction for years. And he comes to you and he says, I found sobriety, but all the evidence points to he hasn't. But you so badly want to believe your son, you so badly want that for him that you're willing to kind of believe that lie and bite deep into it, even though it's not true. Because you want to believe the best. Maybe a wife, you've had this discussion with your husband, you've heard rumors of infidelity or unfaithfulness or flirtation, and you've confronted your husband, and he says, no, honey, I absolutely love you, I adore you, there's just no way. Only to discover the truth is that all those rumors are true. And you were actually the last person to come to know about it. You just want to believe the best in people, and that's where Jonathan was. He just wanted to believe the best about his dad. Hey, Jonathan, your dad's trying to kill me. No, he's not. My dad told me the truth. Can I give you the next lesson out of this? Is deep friendships tell the truth even when it's unpleasant. And that's what David was doing that day. Hey, I know you want to believe the best about your dad, but can I tell you something? Your dad lied to you, and your dad's still trying to kill me. His jealousy and anger are still pointed directly at me. And I know what it's like when a friend comes to you, and they start speaking truth to you, and they do it with love. It still hurts, doesn't it? Let me remind you of Proverbs 27, verse 5. Better is an open rebuke than hidden love. Wounds from a friend can be trusted, but an enemy multiplies kisses. And I think there are times, friends, listen, when you have a deep connection with somebody like Jonathan and David have, where you've welcomed someone into your life and they have a part of your heart, that you are going to get hit with some things. Like someone might come to say, you know, right, your son is lying to you about his sobriety. And you need to listen to that with some wisdom and discernment. There might be some moments where you might need to tell somebody, listen, you and I have been friends for a long time. I've never seen you drink this heavy. Now, you've had one or two before, but I've never seen you depend on it like you're depending now. I think you're depending on this way too much. Or how about, like, where's your faith at right now? You feel real distant here. I don't see that same mood of happiness and joy that you had towards the Lord. Like, are you reading the scriptures? Are you opening your Bible? What's the temperature of your faith? Now listen, I know I've been on the receiving end of that, and I oftentimes want to say, what's it to you, right? And you want to hit back, and you want to just like, that's none of your business, but wounds from a friend can be trusted. And if you're ever on the receiving end of that, let me just give you some advice here for a moment. Accept that from a friend that has a deep connection with you. Look at it with wisdom. Say, God, give me discernment. Are they highlighting something that I'm not seeing? Are they pointing at a speck in my eye that I'm not seeing for myself here? You know, I had read this week that the North American porcupine has 30,000 quills to protect itself from harm. As a result, they you would imagine, right, they live pretty solitary lives. Like, who's going to get close to that thing? They travel alone. I've never hit more than one at a time. You can see that they don't get close to any animals, anything, any someone. No. The way they deal with their relationships are one of two ways. Either number one, they attack anybody that gets close to them, or they withdraw when someone gets close to them. They attack or withdraw. We're not too far off from that. When the truth comes at us, even when the truth spoken in love, we do one of two things. We attack and we get our quills out, or we withdraw. And you have to say things like, whoa, I wasn't trying to hurt you. Or you have to say things like this. Hey, what's the matter? Why aren't you talking? Why don't we have the connection that we used to have? And I suppose there probably was some of that with Jonathan and David, but Jonathan was secure enough with his relationship with David that he knew what was being said didn't really intend to harm. Like if you get into 1 Samuel chapter 20, look at verse 4, it says that Jonathan said to David, whatever you want me to do, I will do that. Like what's our next steps here, Jonathan? Where do we go from here? My dad wants you dead. I want you alive. I can't believe my dad wants you dead because he told me he didn't want you dead. But buddy, I'll tell you what, I'll do anything to protect you right now. Anything to protect you. And so David and Jonathan, they come up with this plan. They recognize that if Saul sees David again, David is a goner. And so they decide to come up with the plan, and that is for David to flee, for David to hide out, for David to be a fugitive. And for 10 years, about 10 years, a full decade, David is on the run from Saul, trying to track him down and to have him killed. So much so that David has to put an army of fierce fighters around him, 600 trained men as a private army, just in case Saul catches up with him, David can fight back. And then out of that 10-year time, there's this one moment where Jonathan realizes, I'm not ever going to see my friend again. Like, because of my dad's relationship with him and the proximity of him being on the run, we're never, so 1 Samuel chapter 20, verse 42, Jonathan says to David these words. Like, these are parting words. These are words of tears and weeping words. These are words of like, this relationship was deep, but because of proximity, we're not going to have the same depth anymore. Go in peace, for we've sworn friendship with each other in the name of the Lord, saying, the Lord is witness between you and me and between our descendants and my descendants forever. Then David left. That's sad words. And Jonathan went back to his town. And they recognized that for 10 years, they're probably not going to see each other. They're not ever going to have that relationship like they once had just because of the circumstances that were surrounding the relationship. And I remember the hardest goodbye of my life. It happened nearly 20 years ago. It was a night before I took a flight out here to start being full-time minister of Bethany Christian Church. And we were on a beach in Southern California with about 5 of my closest friends. James, who you just saw in the video there, was one of them. And we talked about old times, because that's what friends do. Like, we just laughed and we just cried and just laughed so hard your belly hurts. But we never talked about the future, because we knew the future would be empty for us. And the mood, the solemnness that kind of existed, the tension of that night was you're not going to know me anymore. You're not going to know my wife, who I'm madly in love with. You're not going to know my kids, who have changed my world. And I'll not know your wives, and I'll never know your kids. I just won't know that about you. These guys were developed over time. They protected me. I trusted them with the words, even though they're wounding at times. And there's this moment, there's this great moment in 1 Samuel 23 where Jonathan finds out where David is hiding. He's like, I got to go see him. I haven't seen him in 10 years. I got to go see him, right? And so he runs over to David, he finds him, and don't search for it. I just want you to hear these words, these beautiful words, because it starts by saying Jonathan went to David in Horesh, and now listen to this. He helped him find, here's the keys, strength in God. 10 years they haven't seen each other. They weren't catching up on family. They weren't catching up on what had happened. I've gone back to the deepest roots I know with you, David. I want to strengthen you up in God right now. That's the importance of faith, friends. The instant bond you can have. When you haven't seen each other in a decade and you can just get right to the heart of the matter, I'm here to strengthen you up in the faith. This past week, my wife and I had the opportunity, the privilege to get out of town, be a smart part of a small gathering of pastors and at a conference. And during a break, right before dinner, we decided, hey, let's just go run to the ocean real quick. And my wife likes the sun, and I love the water, so I immediately run out to the water and swim through the waves and swim out to, you know, those buoys that say no swimming? That's my territory, right there where the ocean gets dark, and I just tread out and just hope I don't drown, you know, and look out past the horizon of the Atlantic, and then I hear all this whistling and hollering behind me. I don't know what it's about, and I then swim, kind of turn around, and I recognize it's a lifeguard. Like, the lifeguard's like, get back here! Get back, you can't be out that far. And just like any mature adult, I pretended like I didn't listen. I couldn't hear. And I kept that charade up until the lifeguard finally went about waist deep and then swam back into just behind the breakers. And that's when I noticed this guy swimming out, just like a good looking swimmer, just heading out, swimming over the waves, diving under the waves. And he pops up and I recognize who it is. It's one of my best friends growing up, Brian Smith. He was there with the beach with me that night when the fire, and we just told old stories. He popped up. He said, dude, I was sitting there on the shore with my wife. I saw the lifeguard yelling at somebody. I looked down there and said, oh, my gosh, who's that idiot? Then he looked at his wife, Lori, and he said, that's Matt Merrill. And he swam out to me. I said, well, always welcome two idiots now, I guess. Now, we've seen each other maybe twice in 20 years. And there we are just in the Atlantic, out by the no swimming buoys, just floating and treading water. And we're talking about family, we're talking to friends, but most importantly, the thing that drew us together in the deepness of the Atlantic was the deepness of our faith. And though we haven't seen each other, there was an immediate connection because of the faith which was our foundation. Something deeper was already there. And that friend who I trusted, that friend who protected, was that same friend again. Because that's what faith does when it's in the mix of friendships. You know, God had revealed to us this teaching in Proverbs 27, says, as iron sharpens iron, let's say it out loud, so one man sharpens another. And my question to you is, who is sharpening you? When you're in a fight, who has the sword and fighting from your backside like Jonathan had with his armor bearer? Who's protecting you? Who's watching over you? Who's coming to you with words mixed with love and truth? Even though it wounds and you want to attack, you go, that's got to be true. That guy loves me. Who have you lowered the guard of your heart to and welcomed in as a friend? Who's that? Because I want you to have, as a pastor, I want you to have that deep connection like Jonathan and David had. But more importantly, I want you to have that deep connection like Jesus wants to have with you. Listen to these words from the book of John. Jesus says, greater love has no one than this, that he lays down his life for his friends. And Jesus went to prove, I want to be a friend to you so you know where I stand, so you know my level of commitment to you. He went to the cross and he gave up himself. He did that, not just because he needed to die. He did that because you were supposed to die and you need to die. And Jesus said, no. I want them to have life. I want them to have life, and I want them to have life eternal with you, God. And God made this deal with his son. He said, then you go to the cross and you die on the cross for their sins. And Jesus, as a friend, said, gladly. Friends, he wants to be your Savior and he wants to be your Lord and he wants to be your friend. Because that friend wants to introduce you to his wonderful Father, not a king named Saul, but the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, God in heaven. And have you befriended Jesus so that you can find a Father in God?